It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition, Valley Edition. It's my great pleasure to have in the studio, in the heat of the studio, Terry Snyder. Welcome, Terry.
It is warm in here, Mike. Glad to be here, though.
Okay. And on the phone, calling in from Talkeetna and KTNA, of course, Philip Manning.
Pleasure to be here. It's also very warm up here. I hope the listeners, I appreciate it, did turn off my desk fan for the recording.
Okay. Well, let's start by stating the obvious. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And there's fire. Let's take care of that because we've been looking at reports of fires down in the Kenai. We've been talking about fires up to the north in the Fairbanks area. And more importantly, the smoke from all these fires has gone just about everywhere. Glacier reported smoke today. Philip, how about Talkeetna?
Train goes by.
That's life.
We've had a fair bit of haze up here, and on some days, folks have said that they can't. Oh, now an airplane.
Life in Alaska.
Life in Talkeetna for sure.
Okay, so smoke.
Yeah, so we've seen a fair bit of haze and smoke up in this area. Folks have reported being able to smell smoke at times, especially depending on which way the wind is shifting up from Kenai. I guess it was a week or two ago that the wind was shifted very much in our direction from that. We saw quite a bit, and looking at the smoke map, it very much checks out that this is kind of all coming from that Swan Lake fire. We've been pretty fortunate in this area so far, where we're at. Nothing really to report up here, fortunately, but we are definitely seeing some kind of secondary impacts from some of the other large fires burning around the state.
Yeah, I drove back from, I was at Big Lake for the last few days, and it was fine until this morning. And I could see the haze towards you, Philip, but this morning coming back across the lake, you could smell it. And it was what I would cause me to probably not be outdoors. So hopefully we'll get a little wind. There wasn't as much wind today as the last couple days. So that smoke can go a long ways when that wind is part of it.
Okay, we just had a motorcycle go by, so how's that for things?
We got everything covered transportation-wise?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, let's turn to the big fire in the room. And that, of course, is today's announcement at a press conference by Governor Dunleavy that he was going to veto some things. And we printed out the long list. I think there are 182 line items of veto. The big ones, that in terms of dollar amount, appear to be funding for the University of Alaska and also funding for Medicaid. Both of those were partial. He didn't veto all the money going to those places, but it was sufficient for the University of Alaska to, I think, cause considerable concern. Was it $130 million out of a...
Yes, I believe it.
Yeah, out of
135
out of budget, with something in the order of a 40% cut. My understanding is that the regents are scurrying, and the administration from the University of Alaska are putting together a response, but I am not aware of any response that was being made available in advance should this happen. So my tendency is to believe there is no particular plan. It is being created now that the numbers appear to be what they will have to deal with in next year's budget. Either of you have any idea of what possibly could happen as a result of this cut?
To the university?
Yes.
I don't know. There has been some indication that campuses could close if... because this, I think, we were just talking about this before we went on air, Philip, I'd love to compare this to the original Governor Dunleavy budget, because I think that we were going to find a lot of similarities there. And I know the initial reaction from the university was, we just have to close campuses. We can't do this. And I think I'm correct in saying it's really up to the administration on what they close and what they operate. So someone else might have better or recent input, but that's a pretty drastic cut to operations.
So what you're specifically saying is that if there's an interest in the governor to, for example, reduce the size of the two main campuses in Anchorage and Fairbanks,
Southeast,
or even Southeast, mm-hmm. the president and the regents have control of that, and they can say, well, thank you very much for that idea, but what we're going to do is this, which could mean the closing of a community college campus or two or whatever, in order to maintain the central campuses. I do know, having watched a portion of the press conference, that the governor expressed considerable confidence in the ability of the leadership with the university to make it happen, even given the lesser amount of money to deal with. Philip, any other comments about the university part?
Nothing beyond. I think Terry's correct in saying that this cut is pretty close, if not exactly, what was in the governor's original budget proposal. I think it's right in that same ballpark. So it's the sort of thing that, you know, they've had some time to sort of think about it. And I also recall hearing discussions about potential for campus closures. So, you know, barring an override, I think an override of the entire amount is pretty unlikely. They're going to have to prepare for some major cuts.
And we might as well interject here the override. My understanding that in order to override, the legislature would have to have a three-quarters vote of the combined House and Senate bodies. You don't have to have three-quarters in each. You just have to have 45 people out of the 60 say we want to override. Is that pretty much your understanding?
Yeah. So unusual to most of its procedure, the legislature meets unicamerally, meaning one chamber.
Right.
Considering veto overrides, and most veto overrides take two-thirds, but appropriations and revenue bills take three-quarters. So, yeah, you're correct. It would be 45 out of 60.
Tall hill.
And I'm also curious if that is being done, whether they can walk through, there's 182 items here in a lengthy session, say, we override this but not that, et cetera.
I don't think they'd have to consider them en bloc, but I'm not 100% sure about that.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you'd have to go back. I'm not even sure time. I've been here since 1975, and I can't remember, and I'm not saying it didn't happen, that has happened, where they actually got together and overrode the vetoes. But then we're in new territory here with this budget. Mike, you might have a better recall.
I remember I'm not going to rely upon my memory for that. This is one of those things where fact-checking would be important. Well, let's move on to the second piece that was the big one, and that, of course, was a partial override of Medicaid monies, a partial veto, rather, and that was $50 million. And the statements that accompanied that cut had to do with the confidence, once again, that the administration had in the ability of the Department of Health and Social Services to work out both cost savings and other deals that would make up for that money. But that's a pretty good chunk as well. Any comment about that, Terry?
Yeah, that's a rough one. There's a lot of hope that this works out. Hope, but we heard this during testimony and not anything on specifics, knowing they could do things. These are waivers that they have to apply for through the federal government. And there's also a loss of federal funds here, and I'm not real clear what exactly that means. But I do know that it certainly hits the most vulnerable of Alaskans when you take these type of benefits away.
And you're going to be adding other vetoes of programs such as the Senior Benefits Program, et cetera, mm-hmm. others that target a specific part of the population in the state.
Yeah, so back to the Medicaid, before we go on to the senior benefits, he also eliminated the adult dental Medicaid benefit. That's another big one that had pretty much overwhelming testimony in all of the committees, that they wanted to keep that piece because dental health is important to overall health. As far as the senior benefits program, I think there were people that thought that was going to be safe from this. The senior benefits program is sort of an iteration on the Alaska Longevity Program of years ago, but now it's means tested. The very poorest of seniors that get it, there's about 11,000 of them, make hardly any money basically to live day to day in Alaska, and they really depend on that. And it looks to me, just by first glance of this budget, that not only has he zeroed that out, but the money that the legislators added back in for them to repay what he didn't pay on this year's budget of May and June, he took back out too, this administration has. So it's a very big draconian cut to people that can't just pull themselves up by their bootstraps and go out and get a part-time job. And there's a lot, I think, that he is saying in his statement of this that, well, they'll just get this big permanent fund and make up for all of that. I think that's a lot of, again, wishes and hopes.
So we have covered a couple of major topics. One, education at the University of Alaska. A second one that deals with Medicaid and some other related senior benefit vetoes. There are whole other categories that we could go into, but I'd defer, first of all, let's start with Philip. Philip, of all of these vetoes that come here, which one or ones jump out at you in particular or affect people in Talkeetna at this time?
Well, the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission, for one,
okay.
From where I sit.
Okay.
All the funding for that has been vetoed, as well as the Alaska State Council on the Arts. I should disclose I'm a board member of the Denali Arts Council here in Talkeetna that puts on a lot of shows and different things, and that organization relies on a significant operating grant from the ASCA. If that were to go away, it would present some significant financial issues for that organization that's kind of in recovery mode right now as it is. Bond debt reimbursement, the amount that, if I heard that correctly, it was 50%, which I believe
right.
is what the borough had budgeted for.
Right.
So fortunately, the borough is not going to have to take on any additional issues there. And then cuts to the Alaska Marine Highway System. I did a story a few weeks back about surprising impacts on cuts to the ferry system in this area. There were some ranchers in particular who were trying to get cattle up from the lower 48 and were on a specific schedule because of when cattle are born and weaned and that sort of thing. And so even things that, you know, I thought of as mostly a coastal issue did end up having impacts on folks in this area. So, and then the social services cuts, you know, we have an increasing senior population here as well. So senior benefit programs, that's going to impact folks directly up here.
So cycling back just to one of the first mentioned items, the question of APRN, et cetera, there was some mention of a retention in the budget of monies for the emergency broadcasting aspects of radio and so on. But specifically, do you have a sense of the impact on the public radio stations that exist across the state by having this kind of reduction?
You know, the last commission conference call was while we were all both in San Diego for,
exactly,
for a conference.
Right.
But there was discussion there, and I mean, yeah, every station that gets a state grant through APBC, well, gets an APBC grant, they're going to take some serious hits, and I think, you know, most stations were going to be able to make it through a year at this point, but looking out ahead of that, I think things get a lot dicier for some stations. There were I wasn't on the call, but heard that, you know, there were at least one or two stations that weren't sure they could make it another year with this level of cut, because a lot of these stations also receive Corporation for Public Broadcasting funding, and if you're in an area where you are not the sole service provider, like we are here in Talkeetna, then you have to provide a certain amount of matching funds in order to qualify for that federal grant. And that state funding counts toward that. And, you know, in communities that are small or poor, it's difficult otherwise to come up with that matching support to meet your match requirement to get that federal money. So I think the long-term fallout is to be determined at this point. But as far as the cohesiveness of a lot of the stations here in the state, I think it's going to be a serious blow.
Okay.
Right, and I'm wondering what that does to the emergency services angle, because I know some of those areas, and probably yourself too, Philip, those areas really depend on public public radio as their means to find out about disasters.
Absolutely. Well, and that's always been, you know, when it's come up in the legislature before, that's always been the argument that's mm-hmm. been made, is that, you know, regardless of what you think about this or that, that at the end of the day, you know, up here, we're the only newsroom in this area. And so, and we have a transmitter. So sockeye fire, floods, earthquakes, that sort of thing, we're on the air almost immediately and able to give people information, vetted information, in a timely manner. And that's true in for many, many stations around the state.
Mm-hmm. Terry, same question. What jumps out at you beyond what we have
Well,
discussed?
Beyond the senior benefits, it's top of my list, just makes my heart sad, is it just doesn't make any sense. Things like the repealing of the Ocean Ranger program. That's a program that pays for itself, that there, again, was overwhelming testimony and support. In fact, there was a big fine levied on one of the cruise ships this year for pollution, and nobody could really point to the fact that it really cost anything, that it was a good thing to have in. That seems pretty much to me like a political toxic arrow to me. And then other things like behavioral health treatment and recovery grants. There's been a lot of talk about how that's really a missing element, and people have been sort of spinning up trying to get ready to for treatment for people, and it just additional veterans service officers. Again, it's hard to really look at all of this. I started with my yellow pen going through, I don't know, 12 pages of this, and I think I have more yellow of alarming things than I do white. So there's just about something for everybody that it's really going to hit home.
So in addition, as a category, there's a category we might be calling, although it appears in slightly different places, judicial, legal services, all of that. For example, there had been an attempt to reopen an office with an attorney up in Utqiagvik, and other funding for victim witness programs, and a whole bunch of different things dealing with improving the judicial system to handle cases, et cetera. So there are a lot of little things that are scattered through that would appear to affect things all across the state, one place or another, including the VPSO veto, which all of this, given the most recent aspect of a focus of attention on crime in rural areas, although the as I saw today, and I didn't have a chance to dig any more deeply, I saw that the U.S. Attorney General announced a $10 million fund for some aspect of dealing with crime in rural areas. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure how that's going to play out. We'll have to wait for more information.
Yeah, the defunding of the ag program, too, that's really alarming. That's been such a successful program. It's just been growing and growing and growing nationwide. We rate really high as one of the leader in small farms. So that pretty much gutted the ag program. And a program that's been gaining momentum, and that's in implementation of industrial hemp, has been really gaining momentum, and that's been zeroed out too.
So we could go on a bit longer, but I think we need to turn to the other aspect of this whole process. We've mentioned something about how the legislature could meet and overturn the vetoes, but we have not yet mentioned the ongoing discussion about the legislature meeting in a second special session, whether in Wasilla or Juneau and Anchorage. There seems to be some legal dispute that's likely to emerge from this. The targeted date is July 8th, but I'm not aware of any movement to say how this is going to happen, except the discussion about the legal niceties, if you will, with differing opinions from attorneys representing the governor and the legislature. Philip, do you have anything to add to what I've just said?
No, other than it's going to be a very interesting thing to watch unfold. My understanding is, you know, there is the possibility of the legislature, you know, to gavel in, gavel out, and then call their own session. But my understanding as of last kind of head count was that they were short one vote to be able to do that. That, you know, things can change between now and a week from now, but week and a half. But, yeah, it's going to be it's going to be something to be seen. I couldn't even try to predict what's going to happen between now and July 8th.
Right, and they have to have a capital budget also passed
right.
by July 1st. Is that right?
No, that actually, the capital budget, as I understand, needs to be done by the end of July.
End of July.
So, we're okay in one sense. There's time for that to go on a few
plenty,
weeks to
plenty
work
of time
on.
For the food fight over that.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, we started out by talking a little bit about the smoke and the heat of the day. And I do know that as people are looking at the accommodations, the place where you would hold a meeting and do all of this, I think there's sometimes a lack of understanding that if you're going to do serious work, maybe you've experienced this, and you go into a place where you're not able to work in an office or with the staff and the support and the infrastructure of technology, that it becomes more difficult to do your job. There's been discussion about that aspect of being in Wasilla, that to stand up a location like that has a lot of moving parts. And while technically it's doable, there's a cost factor and there's a doing factor. We're in the business of doing audio, and just setting up an audio system so that people can hear whether you're calling in from outside, et cetera, is a whole big deal. My sense about this is the administration has, starting from almost day one in various committee meetings, said, here's the idea. This is what we'd like to do. We'll figure it out. And the same thing seems to apply with this, the budget and the veto. Here's our idea. It's very clearly expressed by the governor. He wants to make sure that the budget achieves a certain level, and then we'll figure out the impacts of the variety of veto actions and so on. And I've been here long enough to remember 1986 and a different financial meltdown in the 2007-2008 period. And the reverberation of something like this when you start talking about reductions, if it's the Division of Agriculture, there are jobs that go away. If it's a variety of places where there have been people employed and so on, I'm not sure that I have yet found any research that suggests that money that flows at a one-time basis from a permanent fund has managed to have a lengthy impact upon the economy. Philip, have you come across anything that helps to understand that if there is a $3,000 check, that will take and replace and mitigate all these cuts?
Well, it would be hard to say that it's going to replace and mitigate all of them. I believe ICER did some research a few years ago when the first round of cuts came through under the Walker administration, saying that there is a significant impact and potentially even traced to, you know, jobs lost when you do have a smaller dividend, but they've also done research that shows the exact same thing through cuts in state funding for public services. So, you know, it's kind of looking at maybe six of one, half a dozen of the other. Going back to talking about, you know, standing up a session in Wasilla, under the premise of increased access to the public of Alaska. But one thing that stuck out to me as odd about that since the beginning is that when you have it in a location like that, you're not going to have gavel to gavel. You're not going to have the legislature's own video streaming service. And, you know, committee meetings, by and large, tend to happen in the middle of the day on weekdays anyway. So it's not as if you're going to have a lot of people necessarily taking time off work to be able to go and testify or sit in, especially sit in and try to keep track of what's going on with these meetings. So the public access argument seems strange to me, as opposed to, you know, in that case, why not Anchorage, where you've got not only more state-owned facilities that you could potentially do this in, but also greater access to communication infrastructure so that you could potentially have the sort of coverage that we're used to seeing out of Juneau.
Yeah, and I've been to a special session in Anchorage. I don't know how many years ago it was, but, you know, the first thing was a big hoopla. It was at the Egan Center. It was full, but by the second day of the special session, very few people there. I really think that whole thing about people have their everyday lives, at least with gavel-to-gavel coverage. You may not be there in person, but you can. They record it. You can listen to it later. You can stream it. I think we've moved on from the days of having to have that public interaction for everything that we do. I think it's overrated in some regards. And just the cost alone, when you look at, you know, cuts to the senior benefits, but we're willing to spend $1.5 million on, you know, going to a community that has no real operation to function to support this other than a gymnasium and a high school. It just seems a little odd.
And on that odd note, we have finished another edition of Valley Edition. And I want to thank Terry for coming in. It's warm in our studio. Yeah. And it's warm outside. We see people just standing there.
Yeah.
I want to thank you, Philip, from the warmth of your office up there and willingness to turn off your fan, for calling in also as we work our way through the heat of the day.
It's supposed to be beautiful up here in Talkeetna, but there is a burn ban on. So keep
yeah,
on.
And there's also a ban on fireworks,
yes,
which pretty
is.
Much statewide, so we should be cognizant of that.
Good point. Thank you, Terry. Okay, we'll be back next week for another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.